See China right in front of you. See the canyons broken by cloud. See the tuna fleets clearing the sea out. See the bedwind fires at night. See the oil fields at first light. And see the bird with a leaf in her mouth. After the flood, all the colors came out. It was a beautiful day. Don't let it get away. Beautiful day. Good morning and welcome to the Health Matters Radio Show with me, Neil De Silva. I hope you're all keeping well today and you've had a great weekend and you're looking forward to the week ahead. We've got a great show ahead of you this morning. We're going to talk about various health matters, including the dangers of ultra-processed food and also what is brown fat. Most people know they've got body fat, but actually, did you know that you've got brown fat as well? And brown fat is actually quite good. So we're going to talk about brown fat, and we're also going to talk about lymphedema and lipedema. So I have my special guest on with me this morning, Dee Stringer from Swelling Matters. Hi, Dee, how are you?
Hi, good morning, Neil. Nice to see you again.
And to see you. It's good to see you. It's been a while, hasn't it?
It's been varying.
So we're going to talk more about what Dee does in a short while, because it's quite an interesting subject. And we have an event week coming up in March, which is the Lymphedema Awareness Week. So that's coming up in March, and we'll talk more about that when we interview Dee and find out more about what she does and how she can help people. So before we start, a bit of housekeeping. The show's purpose is to provide competent information on the subject matters covered and to help educate, inform and enlighten you as to ways that you can improve your own health. However, this is on the understanding that I am not engaged in providing medical advice, and the content in the show should not be treated as a substitute for medical advice. If you have any concerns about your general health or you require medical or other expert assistance, please speak to a suitably qualified healthcare professional, which in many cases can be obtained by dialing 111, speaking with your local pharmacist, and not necessarily your doctor as the first port of call. All the content is provided for general information only and is based on my knowledge, my experience and my opinion, and I disclaim any liability that is incurred from the use of or application of the content of the show. So that's that out of the way. Let's have a chat about ultra-processed foods. There's been some research papers out recently that have drawn quite a strong correlation between ultra-processed foods and certain types of cancer. Now, as we know, most people know that ultra-processed foods aren't particularly healthy for the body. But most people don't really know what ultra-processed foods are. So we're going to talk about some typical examples of foods that are ultra-processed. So very simply, ultra-processed foods are foods that have gone through so many changes to their basic form that they require lots and lots of additives to be allowed back into the food chain. And what that means is there's often very little left of the original ingredients. So this can include things like pot noodles. It can include shelf-stable ready meals, cakes, confectionery, foods that have got additives, preservatives, flavourings, colourings in them, and often lots of sugar, fat and salt are added as well to give them flavour and consistency. So there's been some research by the Sorbonne in Paris, and they looked at the eating habits of 105,000 adults over a number of years. And they looked at what they were eating and their general health. And what they found was that a 10% increase in the amount of ultra-processed foods in the diet was linked to a 12% increase in cancers of some description. And they also found very specifically that there was a rise of 11% in breast cancer, which is obviously quite a worry. So, you know, the point here is that we know that these processed foods are not particularly healthy for us. They're convenient, and sadly often they're very, very tasty, but we know that they're not particularly healthy. But this correlation between ultra processed foods and cancer makes for quite worrying reading. And we know that there's obviously a huge link between ultra-processed foods and obesity as well. And interestingly, France is one of the few countries that already specifically warns its own people against high levels of ultra-processed foods on what they call the precautionary principle. So as I mentioned, there is that link to obesity, which is a strong correlation. But there is this now, there is now this link to cancer as well. So the terminology for processed food. So there's four stages of food classification. So the first is unprocessed. So these would be foods in their natural state. So we're looking at fruits and vegetables, meats. You know, if you pull a carrot out of the ground and you wash it and eat it, that's a class one food. If you killed the cow and sliced off a piece of meat and cooked it, that would also be classed as an unprocessed food. So these can be cooked, they can be ground, they can be dried, they can be frozen, but they essentially are the food in their unprocessed or minimally processed form. The second group are foods that are ingredients in processing, so things like salt and sugar and oils. So if you combine the ingredients in this group, for example, if you combined fats and salt together to make salted butter, they would stay in group two. Group three are processed foods, which basically means you combine together groups one and group two. So examples of this would be bread, wine, canned vegetables. So these additives are allowed if they preserve a food's original properties. So anything that's added, perhaps the canned food to stop it going off, would be classed as a group three. And then we come on to group four. And group four is the category that we're talking about this morning. And these are the ultra-processed foods. So these don't have a strict definition, but there are some common properties of these particular foods. So they typically have five or more ingredients. They are typically aggressively marketed, and they are highly profitable for the companies that sell them. And a food is classed as a group four food if it includes substances not commonly used in culinary purposes or preparations. So they try to imitate the group one foods, the foods in their natural form, but they have a lot of undesirable added chemicals sometimes to them. So I'll give you some examples of typical foods that are in their natural form, in their processed form, and then in the ultra-processed form. So, for example, potatoes. Potatoes in their natural form, cooked, baked, steamed, one ingredient, nice and simple. So that's natural. When they're processed, a processed example of potatoes will be tinned potatoes. So they are still potatoes, but they've got things like firming agent and antioxidants to keep them fresh in the tin. Sometimes they add sugar, sometimes they add salt. But generally speaking, they've only got two, three, maybe four ingredients. And then we come on to ultra-processed. So these would be examples, for example, oven chips. So this would include sunflower oil, rice flour, potato starch, turmeric, paprika. These are taken from their natural form and they have lots of added things to them. So they would be ultra-processed. Turkey. A natural turkey leg, one ingredient, nice and simple, low in fat, high in protein, one ingredient. Processed turkey, wafer-thin honey-roast turkey slices, so around 80% turkey, but they also add things to it like salt and sugar. And then ultra-processed would be things like the breaded turkey escallops, so quite a low percentage of turkey, maybe 30% turkey, but they include things like additional fats and sugars and vinegar and salts and starches, and some of them can contain up to 19 ingredients. Rice, natural rice, brown rice on its own, nice and simple, one ingredient, rich in selenium, good source of fibre, good for your digestive system and good for overall health, one ingredient. Processed would be the rice that you buy in the packets that you would put in a microwave. So they generally add a bit of sunflower oil and other additives designed to preserve the rice in the packet, and they would have up to 10 ingredients. And then ultra-processed would be a ready meal risotto with things like salt and sugar to help it last longer, give it more flavour, and they can have up to 30 ingredients. So it's worth reading food labels. It's worth looking at what you're eating. I mean, generally speaking, there are foodstuffs in our diet, in our day-to-day foods, that whilst they're classed as being a legal foodstuff, arguably they're not that particularly healthy for us. High levels of salt, high levels of sugar, high levels of fat, these are all linked to obesity. And in turn, obesity has been linked to certain forms of cancer. And even quite innocuous food additives like titanium dioxide. Well, titanium dioxide is a whitening agent that's added to food. Now, some sources suggest that titanium dioxide is actually a carcinogen, but it's still allowed within the food chain. So it's definitely worth reading your food labels. So here's a few tips. So start reading the food labels. Look at the traffic light information on the front. If you see any red, I would tend to avoid it. If the traffic light system isn't on the packaging, there could be a reason why. That perhaps the manufacturers are trying to hide something. So it's always worth reading the ingredients labels. Anything with more than 3 grams of fat or 1.5 gram of saturated fat or 5 grams of sugars or a third of a gram of salt per 100 grams means that they're either high in fat, high in salt, high in sugar. So you perhaps need to think twice about eating those sorts of things. And then look at the ingredients list, because the longer the list, the more chance there is that that food is actually ultra-processed. And stick to whole foods. Stick to vegetables, whole grains, starchy carbohydrates, porridge oats, brown rice, lean proteins, and, you know, for example, fish and eggs and chicken and pulses. You know, they are foods in their natural form, and they're much healthier for you than some of the processed junk that's available in supermarkets at the moment. And don't forget fruit as well. Fruit in moderation is good for you, and lots of water to stay healthy. So some people do have these processed foods, for example, pizzas, from time to time as a treat. And I'd argue that avoiding them altogether would be the healthier thing to do. But if you have them now and again, but overall your diet is a healthy one, then you know you can get away with it perhaps. But definitely stay away from these ultra-processed foods on the regular basis, because the link to obesity is absolute, and the link to cancer is quite a strong one as well. Okay, so you can tweet into the show. If you go to Twitter at Health Radio Show, you can drop me a line, you can drop me a tweet, and I'll give you a shout out and a mention. And we've got a few shout outs coming up after the first song. The hashtag is hashtag Health Matters Radio Show. You can also find the show's Facebook page. If you search Health Matters Radio Show, you can find me on Facebook. And you can also contact me directly via my website, which is www.i-nutrition.co.uk. So over the last week, I put a poll out on Facebook for listeners to choose between 1977 and 2007 for the songs for this week's show. And 1977 took it by quite some margin. So I've picked a couple of songs from 1977 to play for you this morning. We've got songs from Tom Robinson and the Sex Pistols coming up a bit later. But to kick us off, we've got Hotel California by the Eagles.
Thank you. master's chambers. They're gathered for the feast. They stab it with their stealing eyes, but they just can't kill the beast. Last thing I remember, I was running for the door. I had to find the passage back to the place I was before. Relax, said the nightman, we are programmed to receive. You can check out anytime you like, but you can't.
jobsinkent.com, the quick and simple way to advertise your job vacancies in Kent, with prices from just £99 per job per month. Visit Kent's largest job site, jobsinkent.com.
You're listening to the Health Matters Radio Show with me, Neil De Silva. I hope you're all keeping well out there. And I have with me my special guest today, Dee Stringer from Swelling Matters. Hi, Dee.
Hi, Neil.
Good to see you today, and we'll be finding out more about what Dee does in about 15 minutes. So as I mentioned, the show's Twitter page or Twitter feed is at Health Radio Show. If you go to at Health Radio Show and use the hashtag Health Matters Radio Show, you can drop me a tweet if you'd like a shout out, or you have an event you'd like me to mention, or you'd just like to say hello. You can find the show's Facebook page if you search Health Matters Radio Show. And you can find me personally through my website, which is www.i-nutrition.co.uk. So we have a couple of shout-outs that I'm going to mention right now. The first is from Terry Botfield. Hi, Terry. Good to hear from you. Terry has a networking group down on Romney Marsh, which is running on the 20th of February, which is tomorrow. From 5 o'clock at the Ship in Dymchurch. So if you find Terry via Facebook or Twitter, his Twitter feed is at TDBotty, B-O-T-T-Y. At TDBotty, if you find Terry, make contact with him and find out more about the Marsh After Hours networking event tomorrow from 5 o'clock. Also had a tweet in from Ben at BLIT Solutions. Hi, Ben. Good to hear from you. And he's just put there a big hello. Ben's company does IT support and IT equipment. And his Twitter feed is at BLIT Solutions. Also worth mentioning the Wellbeing Symposium, which is coming up in 2 days' time in Ashford on the 21st of February. If you go to www.thewellbeingsymposium.co.uk, you can find out more information about that. That's a whole day event at the Ashford International Hotel. And also I'd like to give a shout out to the One You Shop in Ashford. The One You Shop are encouraging local businesses and business owners to go down and have a free body MOT and talk about health in the workplace. So it's part of an NHS initiative. So the advice they give is free of charge. But they also help individuals with things like smoking cessation. They can do healthy weight management checks for adults and children. They can do blood pressure checks, and they can give you general support and advice. So the One You Shop is open from 9:30 to 5 o'clock Tuesday to Friday and 9:30 to 1 o'clock on a Saturday. And it's located at Park Mall in Ashford, which is just around the corner from the Tank. Right, brown fat. Did you know you've got brown fat? Most people know they've got fat of some description. And even if you're reasonably slim and reasonably fit, you will still have body fat. And actually, body fat is a good thing. Too much body fat is not so good. That's a subject for a whole different conversation. But most people know the body fat that they have around their thighs, around their backside, around their belly. And that's what's known as white fat. And white fat essentially is our body's self-preservation mechanism, and it's used for energy storage. and it is the most abundant type of fat in the body. It helps to control metabolism. It does actually release different types of hormones. So there is a need for body fat around the body, but as I said, not too much. But you also, in addition to white fat, you have brown fat. And brown fat is used for burning energy. It's also called BAT, which is brown adipose tissue. So when this brown fat is activated, brown fat burns white fat. But the only problem with brown fat is it's less abundant. So, for example, if you've got someone that weighs 150 pounds, they might have 20, 30, maybe 40 pounds of white fat, but they'll only carry about 2 to 3 ounces of brown fat. So, unlike white fat, which makes up the majority of the fat in our bodies, and as I mentioned, is used to store excess calories that we consume, brown fat actually burns white fat to produce heat, but only under the right conditions. And brown fat generates around 300 times more heat than any other tissue in the body. But those 2 ounces of brown fat could be capable of burning several hundred calories per day, which is the equivalent of a 30-minute bout of exercise. And most adults, if not all adults, have small pockets of brown fat on their body. But because these are small pockets, you don't necessarily see them. So these pockets of brown fat are typically located on the sides of the neck, running down the shoulder, and sometimes into the upper arms as well, in the region just above the collarbone. And essentially, brown fat is used as a regulatory system to heat yourself. So the body can heat itself in a number of ways. The first is insulation. So body fat, white fat, is a great insulator. And people that carry too much body fat generally don't have a problem keeping warm. You can also, if your body temperature drops, your muscles will actively get involved, which is the process of shivering. So that contraction, that constant contraction of your muscles, obviously generates heat. And the passive way is obviously using brown fat. So when we look at brown fat cells are smaller than white fat cells. So white fat cells contain a single lipid, a single fat droplet inside them. But brown fat cells contain numerous droplets, but these droplets are much, much smaller. But they also contain a number of iron-containing mitochondria, which gives brown fat tissue its brown appearance. So brown fat also has more capillaries than white fat, and this helps to supply the tissue with oxygen and nutrients, and also helps to distribute heat around the body. So when we talk about the mitochondria is the powerhouse of a cell. So it's the parts of the cell that turn sugars and fats and proteins that we eat into chemical energy that the body can then use to live. So as I say, these brown fat cells have more mitochondria, more energy-producing cells, than the white fat cells. And actually, it's been proven that cold temperatures activate brown fat. As I mentioned, if you're in a cold environment and you start shivering, then that's your body's way of trying to maintain body temperature. But if you try to resist the urge to shiver, then your body is forced to actually use brown fat cells to produce body heat rather than using the muscles. And this can be for as little as 5 or 10 minutes. I mean, you know, I wouldn't recommend going into a cold environment for a long period of time, and certainly not to the point where you make yourself ill. But 5 or 10 minutes, even a 30-second cold shower, if you resist the temptation, if you can mentally resist the temptation to actually shiver, then your body will use the brown fat mechanism to generate body heat. And brown fat cells use white fat cells as an energy source to generate that heat. So if you were to go into a cold environment, if you were to even just reduce the thermostat in your home down to the mid-60s in terms of degrees, then that is enough to actually stimulate even a small amount of brown fat activity. So if you actually look at the way brown fat operates as well, there's been some really interesting research papers that have said that brown fat actually can improve your blood sugar metabolism as well. So it has arguably diabetes-fighting properties. And it's been proven that people with low glucose levels tend to have more brown fat than those with higher glucose levels. So there may be a direct correlation between glucose control and the levels of brown fat as well. So brown fat can also increase your metabolic set point. So your metabolic set point is the level at which your brain starts to slow down metabolic activity. So if you've actually got more brown fat, then you can maintain a higher metabolic set point. If you've got lower levels of brown fat, your metabolic set point can drop, and actually that can make it harder for you to lose weight. So if you can burn another 200 or 300 calories a day just through brown fat activity, then that is actually enough to shed a pound of body fat in a couple of weeks. And that's important as we get older, because typically we add around 10 pounds of body weight per decade. So if you can maintain your brown fat levels, if you can actively increase your brown fat levels and make your brown fat work for you, then it can be a good way to actually ward off weight gain as you get older. So here's a couple of tips. If you exercise in cool temperatures, then actually you actually do stimulate your brown fat stores during your workout. So ideally, exercise in temperatures between 62 and 64 degrees or lower. And even better, don't cover your skin up, because as the sweat starts to evaporate, that cools the body down as well. And then that also can activate your brown fat cells to burn your white fat cells. And one of the things you don't want to do is actually turn up the heating while you're exercising, because if you turn up the heating, you increase the ambient temperature, and the hotter the environment, the less brown fat activity there will be. And what's interesting as well is if you eat more apples with the peel on, there is a substance within apples called ursolic acid. And ursolic acid is actually a substance in quite high concentrations in apple peel. And this acid increases brown fat and muscle mass, while at the same time it can help reduce obesity, and it can help you to improve glucose tolerance. And a couple of more foods as well that are high in this acid are cranberries, blueberries, plums, prunes, and some herbs as well. So oregano, thyme, lavender, basil, and peppermint leaves. So those are very high in the acids that help the body to produce and maintain brown fat activity levels. So hopefully there's some interesting points there about brown fat. As I mentioned, people tend to know that they've got white fat storage, but they're not so aware of the brown fat. And we all tend to have it. And if you can actually make your brown fat work for you, you can actually use your brown fat to burn off your white fat. So before we go on to my interview with my guest today, Dee Stringer from Swelling Matters, we're going to have one more song from 1977. It's a classic from the Tom Robinson Band, and it's 2468 Motorway.
Keep on driving home, we're going home. And it's 2, 4, 6, 8, never too late. interested in collaborating with like-minded Kent businesses? Join our supplymybusiness.co.uk community today and start growing your Kent business network for just £20 a month.
Welcome back to the Health Matters Radio Show with me, Neil De Silva. If you'd like to tweet the show's Twitter page for a shout out or just to say hi, or even to ask a question between now and next week's show that I can answer for you on air, then please go to the show's Twitter feed, which is at Health Radio Show, using the hashtag Health Matters Radio Show. Drop me a tweet, ask me a question, or just ask for a shout out, or if you've got something to announce, and then I'll give you a mention on next week's show. You can also find the show's Facebook page if you search Health Matters Radio Show. And as normal, if you'd like to contact me directly via email, you can find my contact details at my website, which is www.i-nutrition.co.uk. Okay, so on to our special guest interview this morning. We have Dee Stringer from Swelling Matters. Hi, Dee.
Good morning, Neil.
Good to have you on the show this morning.
Thank you.
And we're going to talk more about what Dee does within the realms of lymphedema and lipedema, which are two conditions that sometimes are quite easily confused because they sound very similar. But Dee's going to explain more about what they are and how they can affect people. So Dee, let's kick off the interview then. So tell me about your background. How did you get into doing what you're doing? Because it is quite a specialist subject, isn't it?
It is. It's very niche market. I've been a nurse forever and ever and ever since the age of 14, a few years back. And then joined the army to do my nurse training, travelled all over the world. And then I came into being an agency nurse, and on an agency secondment, I was asked to fill in at a lymphedema clinic, which is a specialised clinic for people with disproportionately large limbs.
Okay.
I went there for 2 months and I loved it so much I stayed for 2.5 years. Oh. And then one of my ladies actually said to me, would you like to do this for the rest of your life? And I thought, you're mad. And then I thought, well, do you know what? Why not? So I paid for all my own training, paid for all the equipment I need, and the rest, as they say, is history.
Wow. That's quite some journey, isn't it?
It's a transformation for someone that used to put plasters on people, yes.
Because you've actually got quite a lot of qualifications, haven't you? I think you mentioned about having diplomas in Thai foot massage.
Thai foot massage. Yep. I was a registered nurse forever, and then I went on to do the holistic side. So I do Swedish holistic massage, Thai foot massage, and I do some Reiki as well. And now, since promoting people with larger limbs, I've now become a representative for the British Lymphology Society for the South East, which I am hugely proud of.
That's quite an honour, isn't it?
It is, rather.
And I think it's an area of health that's sadly underrepresented.
Very underrepresented.
And I think there's a lot of misunderstanding about it as
there
well.
There is. On the lymphedema side, there's 200,000 people registered in the UK with lymphedema, and that's only the ones that have been diagnosed and are actually being treated. And on the lipedema side, there's 370 million people worldwide, which is phenomenal.
370 million?
Million worldwide.
Wow.
When I was researching the lipedema side for presentations, I actually discovered an Eritrean queen who had lipedema. And on her tomb, her date of birth was 1481 BC. Considering it was 1481 BC, we've really not come an awful long way in treating these ladies with larger limbs.
Wow, that is quite a shocking number, isn't it? So 370 million people, are they 370 million diagnosed or
diagnosed?
Okay,
diagnosed.
So if we liken that to type 2 diabetes in this country, there's about 4.6 million people with type 2 diabetes, but only 4 million actually know they've got it. Of the 200,000 that have got lymphedema, they're diagnosed.
They're diagnosed.
How many people are undiagnosed? Is it a condition that goes...
Loads more. It can be genetically predisposed. So you can actually pass it down through genes, faulty genes in your makeup.
Okay.
So you can be born with too many lymph nodes, which would give you larger legs as well, which is a bit daft. There is a young lady in Scotland who's 6 years old, and she has already been in stockings for 4 years,
okay,
which is quite frightening, really, and she's got the rest of her life to actually crack on with these large limbs.
So is there a period of time where people go perhaps go misdiagnosed, where they just think that
Or undiagnosed,
where they think they're just overweight?
Yeah, and an awful lot of them think, oh, my mum had big legs, so I'm going to get big legs, which is true on the lipedema side especially, because it's more a genetic trait on the female side of the family to have these huge, huge legs. But when it comes to, like, lymphedema, I mean, up until a few years ago, people were only getting treatment for it after cancer, which, rightly so, everybody should have treatment if they have had cancer and get larger limbs.
Yeah.
But then there's so many other people that just say, well, do you know what? That's my bag and I've got to deal with it. But wow. Trying to get GPs to actually send them to diagnose clinics.
And I guess the problem as well is if they think they're just overweight and they've got a condition that's undiagnosed.
Yeah, yeah.
They'll have the frustration of perhaps doing some of these crazy, silly diets out there and actually not losing the weight.
Bad diets, because
the weight is not the problem, is it?
No, and giving people water tablets to get rid of fluid is not the problem. Lymphedema is like when you... Well, you went... I don't think you've worn stilettos, but that's another story. Well. there are some people who have had worn stilettos and they've got blisters. That's lymphatic fluid.
Okay.
It's thick, it's sticky... It doesn't respond to giving people diuretics. It actually needs to be compressed. It needs to have lymphatic drainage. It needs to be gently massaged out. And it does need some serious attention.
Okay, so we talk about lymphedema and lipedema. They sound very similar.
Yeah.
What's the differences between the two? So let's cover lymphedema first.
So lymphedema is... a collection of fluid that's over 3 months old. That's the classification. So you would have, if you had surgery, you would have oedema.
Okay.
Once it actually gets locked into the tissues, then it becomes lymphedema, and that's where the tissues start to change.
Okay.
So it needs to be compressed. It's a life-limiting, lifelong condition. Once you've got it, unfortunately, you've got it for life. It's there Christmas Day. It's there on bank holidays. There's no days off from it at all. It's just horrible. And the problem is with the lymphatic fluid, if you're not actually keeping it moving, some people can't wear compression, and I get that because it's horrible. But if you're not actually getting the lymphatic fluid moving, then you've got a possibility of cellulitis. Now, you won't need to have a scratch or an insect bite, which can resolve in cellulitis, but because the fluid isn't actually moving, it will actually trigger on its own. Cellulitis can still be a killer, even in this day and age. It can still put you in intensive care. It can still put you in the morgue. It's that serious.
Wow. Okay. So what's lipedema then?
Lipedema is the adipose fat side of it.
Okay.
So when you wake up your first menstrual cycle, if you've got it in your family, they say, if you wake up your first menstrual cycle, your legs will change. So from the top to the waist, you're normal, as people would say. And then from the waist, you become like the traditional, what we think of as the English bum.
Right, okay.
The pear shape.
Yep.
But your legs then change. They become very white and opaque. And then the swelling stops at the ankles. However, when you get so much adipose fat laid down, it will then block off your lymphatic system as well. So then you will start getting swelling on top of the fat side.
Okay.
It's a bit mad.
Well, you can see how kind of one thing leads to another.
Yeah.
So does it generally affect below the waist?
In
both cases?
Generally. But you can't, the lipedema, you can actually get it on your arms as well.
Okay. So lymphedema, you don't get it on the arms?
Lymphedema, you would get it secondary to cancer.
Right, okay.
So if you have a mastectomy and they take out your axillary nodes and do a clearance, then there's a possibility that you will actually develop larger arms. And then, even on your affected side, say you have a left mastectomy, it can actually transfer over onto the right. So what I'm championing at the minute is what we call substitution pathways. So you massage what we call the affected arm prior to the surgery, and you actually transfer the drainage over onto the other side. So that where you're not actually taking the nodes out, they can pick up the swelling and they can get rid of it before it even happens. And I did this for a lady 3 weeks before her surgery, and that was 3 years ago. She still hasn't developed a big arm, which obviously is much better for her. The problem then, if you get it like one-sided as well, is trying to get clothes to fit.
Okay.
So you've got this disproportionately large arm on one side. You're trying to accommodate clothes on that side, and then everything's baggy and falling off on the other side.
So it can affect one side or the other?
Yeah, but it still can transfer over.
Wow.
Because of the nature of the line of the lymphatic nodes, it can actually transfer onto the other side. And that's what I do teach my ladies and gents.
So with the people that come to you for lymphedema or lipedema, in what ways do you help them? How can you help them?
I can help tremendously. I have invested massively in equipment, apart from my hands as well. I can do lymphatic drainage, medical lymphatic drainage. I use kinesiology as well, so I've not quite got away from being a nursey nurse yet. I'm still sticking plasters on people. I do deep oscillation therapy, which is the electrostatic massage, and that drives to a depth of 8 centimetres from the surface of the skin with no pain and no bruising. I do low laser light therapy for wound care. I do multi-layer lymphedema bandaging, which is very, very invasive. These are short stretch bandages which literally push the fluid back and you become like a mummy because you've got to wear them 24/7.
Does it cause any other damage or is it purely just
squeeze? No, not when you're trained to actually do it yourself.
Yeah. Okay, so with the lymphatic massage, what does that involve?
That involves clearing the nodes. So if it's a breast lady, I would clear the neck nodes. And when I did the Swedish holistic course, I said there's 100 nodes in the body. There's about 100 nodes in the neck, actually. So you would clear the neck, you would clear the axilla, you would get them to deep breathe so that they're actually dropping their diaphragm down onto the second heart that you have in your body, which is the sternocalli, which is where everything dumps into in your lymphatic system.
Okay.
That's just below the diaphragm. And as you breathe in deeply, it actually swishes the fluid around. I teach my ladies how to do their own drainage. I teach them how to do dry skin brushing. I obviously advise them on diet as well because we know the effects of eating rubbish food, which unfortunately is too much about us as well. So that's basically what I do. So now when I started a couple of years ago, it was just a couple of ladies, and now I've extended my clientele up to Bromley and as far as Dover.
So do you work from a clinic or do you go out to see people?
I do 3 days a week on the road because an awful lot of my ladies have huge legs. And
well,
you would think
that with the issues they have, they wouldn't be that mobile, perhaps.
No. Mm. And some of them are actually just trapped in chairs and that's as much as they get. Mm. So I take that to them. I sit down with them. I spend time with them, quality time, not just like tick, tick, tick. And 2 days a week, I have got the amethyst therapy room, which I have ladies who can manage to get to clinic, I have them in there to see them.
Excellent, excellent. So whatever help people need or wherever they are within Kent, you can either go to them or they can come to your clinic in Whitstable.
Yeah.
Okay, so with regards to the actual services themselves, so you've gone through how you help people, but what do your services do for people? How do they actually help people? What are the end results?
I've had two ladies that I've got into shoes for the first time in 10 years. One I took 9 litres off her legs. The other one I took 12 litres off her legs, which equates to 2 stone, which is pretty remarkable. Mm. And if I can give ladies a licence to shop for shoes, what the heck, why not? I've also reversed gangrene in a lady's foot, so that her foot didn't need to be amputated, and I have saved some people's lives as well along the way.
Really?
Yes.
Wow. So what happened there? Without obviously going into too much.
It was a lady, obviously I'm not going to say who she is.
No, of course.
A lady with cellulitis who was hell-bent on not having any antibiotics. No, we've come an awful long way in medical terms in many years with gadgets and gizmos and wonderful machines that mean my shoulders don't get wrecked. However, when it comes to cellulitis, there is one treatment and one treatment only. It's mass doses of antibiotics. And she just wasn't going to have it. But a little bit of a stern talking to, shall we say, and she accepted it. And it did actually save her life.
Yeah. I mean, if you listen to previous shows, my views on antibiotics are perhaps in some cases they're given out too freely.
Absolutely.
However, I think it's one of the most important advances in medical science in the last
absolutely
50, 60, 70 years.
Yeah.
And without a doubt, in certain circumstances, they are absolute lifesavers. But obviously, being a gut health expert, I realise the damage that antibiotics do.
Yeah.
So for anyone that does go on to antibiotics for whatever reason, whether it's for the kind of conditions that Dee's talking about, or perhaps they have a bacterial infection, it's really important to take post-antibiotic measures as well, you know, to rebuild your gut flora. But I digress.
No, I'm completely with you there on that. Everybody needs probiotics to rebalance their gut afterwards.
Absolutely right. Well said, well said. Let's talk about some of the successes that you've had with some of the clients. Obviously, you know, I don't expect you to name people individually, but I'm more looking at people perhaps that you've had successes with that have had a great result, and also to identify some people perhaps are out there listening that may have spent years and years trying to lose weight. They may have undiagnosed lymphedema or lipedema. So let's cover the successes you've had with existing clients first, and then let's talk about people who might be able to identify with certain symptoms that might make them perhaps go to their GP or maybe make contact with you. So what successes have you had first?
Well, for the lady with cellulitis, certainly I've saved her life. And seeing clients on a regular basis, the past 3 years have been no recordings of cellulitis as far as my clientele are concerned. Mm-hmm. Not one. It's meant benefit, obviously, to the client as far as their health is concerned, but it's also benefited the NHS because they haven't had people in blocking beds, as they like to call them now, for 2-3 weeks at a time, having mass doses of antibiotics. I do encourage all my ladies, even though I'm seeing them privately, my ladies and four of my gents actually, I do encourage them to stick with it, to actually go to their GPs, to get referred to lymphedema clinics, to get properly diagnosed and assessed, just to actually take someone's swelling away for even a couple of hours and to actually reduce their pain as well and improve their mobility. It means so much to them. It really does. I mean, if you can imagine, you're a slim chap, you can imagine actually tying bags of spuds around your ankles and trying to carry that weight. They suffer from back pain. If it's a lady with lymphedema in her arm, it may well be that she's actually shifting the cervical vertebrae in her neck because she's carrying an arm that's 80% bigger than it should be because of the fluid. So therefore, obviously, from the neck, you're actually changing the whole anatomy the whole way down the back. I have one lady in Ramsgate who was bitten by a horsefly. And she, unfortunately, I wasn't able to access her until the lymphedema set in. Her calf alone measures 118 centimetres, which is massive.
That is big, yeah.
That is huge. So she's now swinging the leg out to the side, so as she can walk, which is obviously pulling out her hips, damaging her knee, her lower back, the lot.
Wow. And I guess the more you help them, the more mobile they can become, and the more mobile they can become, the more they help themselves.
More they help themselves, and the self-esteem that goes with it as well. Altered body image, we know, plays a massive part. Everybody's wanting these sculpted bodies and wanting to be fit and looking to be wonderful. These people, I need to change attitudes in the general public. I need your public to stop judging everybody because they're sculpted and these other people are not.
Yeah.
These people didn't ask for these swellings.
Yeah.
They have them. End of. Don't sit there and judge people and say that you are so perfect, because do you know what? None of us are.
So how would someone, perhaps that has big thighs and big legs, how would they necessarily perhaps be thinking, or maybe I am an undiagnosed, you know,
get to your GP.
I'm undiagnosed rather than just overweight, perhaps.
Get to your GP, get referred to a dedicated lymphedema clinic and get assessed.
Okay. And it is important. As
it
you
is
said,
vitally important.
It can lead on to other complications.
Absolutely.
If it's not dealt with.
Absolutely.
Okay, Dee. So what are your plans for the coming year? So what does 2018 bring for you? And also tell me a bit more about the Lymphedema Awareness Week.
Yeah, Lymphedema Awareness Week will be on the 4th to the 10th of March. And that's the hashtag socket, the hashtag LAW, hashtag lymphatics, hashtag cancer. I'm raising awareness for that. I'm actually going to see a whole collection of British Lymphology reps in March from Northern Ireland, from Scotland. We're all joining together and seeing how we can actually raise awareness. I'm also going to be providing massages at the London Marathon this year, only because I can't run it anymore because I've got a false knee. I'm also piloting a study which has come to my attention now, where I've had four ladies now with cellulitis that's presented in their abdomens on the skin, and they've all been diagnosed with pelvic cancer in the meantime. So that's wondering if that's a marker for actually investigating pelvic cancer. And then obviously if we can diagnose it better and sooner, we can raise survival rates. I'm also planning to work with the GPs directly with direct referrals, and I'm also rolling out presentations to GP surgeries so that they can actually be informed. I have also been involved with designing the online e-learning course for the Royal College of GPs in diagnosing
lymphedema.
You are busy,
aren't you?
And
you are doing a great job.
I'd like to think so.
Yeah, and I've known you for a while now, and I hear good things about what you do.
Thank you.
You do come highly recommended. So, fantastic. So, if someone wants to get hold of you, what's your phone number? What's your website address? Perhaps your Twitter.
The phone number is 07-919-926680. That's 07-919-926680. Email is info@swellingmatters.co.uk. My website is www.swellingmatters.co.uk, and my Twitter is @dstringer1.
And that's the number one, isn't it?
That's the number one.
So it's www.swellingmatters.co.uk.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Dee. I've learned so much about lymphedema and lipedema. Absolutely. It's been great to have you on the show today. It's been great to find out more about what you do. And again, if you want to contact Dee via her website, it's www.swellingmatters.co.uk. Thank you so much, Dee, for coming on
Neil.
The show.
Thank you, Neil. Good to touch base.
It's been great. So before we wrap up the show for this week, just a quick reminder of my website address, which is www.i-nutrition.co.uk. The show's Twitter feed is @HealthRadioShow. And on Facebook, if you search Health Matters Radio Show, you can find the Facebook page. You can listen again to previous shows at i-nutrition.co.uk/media. You can also go to iTunes, and if you search the Health Matters Radio Show, you can download all previous shows on iTunes podcast. On next Monday's show, it's at 11 o'clock. We will be discussing how diet drinks can increase your cravings for sugar. And my guest next week is Jill Monk from All Health Matters. Do tweet in the meantime if you have any questions, you'd like a shout out, or you'd like me to announce an event on air. And if you'd like to come on the show on future shows from March onwards, then please do make contact with me via Twitter or via my website, i-nutrition.co.uk. And it would be great to have a chat to you. So thanks again to Dee from Swelling Matters. It's been an interesting show. I've learned a lot myself, and I hope you found the subject of brown fat very interesting. So I hope that's been good for you. So until next week, I'll leave you with one more song from 1977. It's the Sex Pistols and Pretty Vacant.